A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi there! Welcome to History in Retrograde. This is the podcast where we use the ancient art of astrology to help us better understand the past. I'm your co-host, Chandler O'Quinn, and joining me live via satellite is my mom! Hi, Mom!
Hi, Chandler. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Are you ready to begin another grand experiment?
I am very ready. I've been ready and waiting. Let's go!
All right, let's give it a whirl.
Okay. Well, are you very excited to be back?
Yes. It has been a while since we have recorded anything. We had a nice holiday break, and it is good to be back for season 3 in the year 2023, History in Retrograde.
That's so cool. I'm very excited. So much has been going on with the podcast and meeting people and doing charts and all the other interesting things that I'm doing at different holistic fairs and meet and greets and all the places that I've been going. So hello, everybody. I'm very excited to have you listening to the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. For those of you, if you do not know how we usually do things around here, the way that we usually do them is that I give my mother the astrological birth date for a random historical figure, and then she will read that chart and then give us her knowledge of what she can find out about the chart. I'm even stumbling around on what we usually do here. And then I come with the reveal of who our mystery history guest is, and then together we go over how accurate the chart was at predicting what that person would do. But we're doing something a little different for this season 3 premiere. I have chosen someone who is so big, someone who is so well known, especially in our household, that I felt that if I even gave Mom the birthday or the birthplace, it would affect her reading of the chart, that she might be able to figure out who it was. And I want to make sure that we're going in this completely free of any biases. So I have given her a chart already made with the correct birth date and time and place, but I did that myself, and so she is seeing this chart blind, without any of the knowledge of even that person's birthday and time. All she knows is that it is a male, and that he was born at 4:35 a.m., and then she has the chart in front of her.
I do. I do have this chart in front of me, and you did it very well, Chandler.
Thank you. All I did was enter it into the computer. I didn't draw anything. But
I know. Drawing it is a whole different animal, but we will maybe eventually get into that. So do you want me to just go ahead and start?
Yeah, I think we're ready. Let's start. Let's go.
Okay. So if you are watching this on YouTube, which hopefully is going to be happening very soon, you can see that this person has Sagittarius rising. And What I don't know, I can't know if this is a male or a female.
Yes, it's a male.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that part. Okay, so let's go through all of the aspects here. All right, so of course we have the rising sign is 12 degrees Sagittarius, and the sun is 17 degrees Capricorn. The moon is 2 degrees Pisces. The Mercury is 22 degrees Capricorn. Ooh, Venus is 29 degrees Capricorn. Mars is 12 degrees Libra. Jupiter is 18 degrees Scorpio. Saturn is 25 degrees Aquarius. Uranus is 27 degrees Aries. Neptune is 14 degrees Virgo. Pluto is 25 degrees Cancer. North Node is 1 degree Aquarius. And Chiron is 5 degrees Gemini. So as you can see by looking at this, with all of the planets all the way around the chart, this is a splash chart. So that makes this person, first off, very dynamic. All right. I would say there's a lot of energy here. Okay. And although this person doesn't have any planets in their first house, having Sagittarius on the first house is something that normally I like to call it the cool factor. there's like kind of a, I mean, this person can also be known kind of like as the boy next door. You know, very cordial, very polite, but also this person kind of has a cool factor. Like, people tend to really like Sagittarius rising people. They're very friendly and easy to get along with. But then we go to second house, and the second house houses this person's sun, Mercury, Venus, and North Node. Now, this person's North Node is at 1 degree Aquarius in the second house. So it is part of their value system. Second house is ruled by Taurus, which is ruled by Venus, which is your money, your finances, and I think also your values and your valuables, you know? So this person has sun conjunct by degree Mercury, and that conjunct by degree Venus. So this person, and it's all in Capricorn. So I would say that this person probably made a lot of money. And they were, or should have been, fairly good. Well, they would have been really hard workers. They would have had also, like, maybe they were communicating, like, that's how they made their money. But also, Venus is there. So it's very interesting how all of their Capricorn, their sun, their Mercury, and their Venus being conjunct in Capricorn, and then having that North Node there as well, which is Aquarius, humanitarian, somehow they might have been very generous with their income. They might have been a person who contributed to humanitarian efforts. If they were a good Aquarius, North Node Aquarius, if they were following their North Node. If they were not following their North Node, their South Node would have been in Leo, and that could have made them very more about themselves, you know. Then in the third house of communication, which is ruled by Gemini, we have Saturn at 25 degrees Aquarius and Moon at 2 degrees Pisces. So Moon in Pisces is extremely creative, all right, and loving. And this person, I think, should have had a very good relationship with women, and having Saturn there at 25 degrees, it is interesting because Saturn in Aquarius, again, is very humanitarian. It's very a person who wants to help. It should be a person who wants to help humanity. And somehow their communications help humanity because it's Saturn and that's the lessons. And then their moon, it would have been somehow helping humanity through creativity, emotional, somehow using their emotions to convey messages to humanity. Their fourth house cusp is Pisces. So their house would have been kind of unusual and creative and dreamlike, dreamy. Maybe
that's their physical house.
Their physical house. Mm-hmm. Would have been kind of dreamy, kind of definitely creative and unique, and very interesting and Neptunian, which is kind of dreamy, you know, fantasy-ish. And then their fifth house cusp is Aries. And having Aries on the fifth house is almost like, that's like having a warrior aspect towards like creativity and maybe show business or leadership or also children, but like protective. But this person has Uranus at 27 degrees in their fifth house. So things in their career, if this is a person who is in show business, things would be lightning fast and happen completely unexpected and in a futuristic kind of way because Uranus rules Aquarius and technology and future. And so somehow they are, actually they should have really liked technology and anything having to do with air or airwaves or this, you know, that kind of technology. Their sixth house is ruled by Taurus, which would have made them a very, very, very hard worker. They would have been the vision that I always have that I describe of, you know, the ox, like in the rain, in the hail, you know, still plodding, still moving forward, still, no matter what, they just keep going, you know? And they might have been kind of a workaholic, but not in so much a fast way, but more in a way that is like stamina. They have a lot of stamina, this person. And they have Chiron in Gemini, in the sixth house. So somehow, in their youth or in a past life, they had issues with communication. But in this life, or from whatever they learned in childhood, they are a really good communicator in their work. Again, this is very interesting because when you see here in the house of communications, which is ruled by Gemini, they have Saturn, basically conjunct Moon. And even though Saturn is in Aquarius and the Moon is in Pisces, right? So communication, lessons in communication for humanity, communication for humanity with emotions. And here we have Chiron, which is the wounded healer, which is someone who may have had issues communicating as a child, who now takes this pain and turns it into healing if they're doing what they're supposed to do. They don't have anything in their seventh house, but their seventh house is ruled by Gemini. Normally, when you have a Sag rising with Gemini on the seventh house, this person would not necessarily be super monogamous. So this person could have that aspect of not necessarily be monogamous. But when you have a Sag rising or a Sagittarius with all these Capricorn placements, it does ground them. And those Capricorn placements actually make them want to be monogamous. They would prefer to be monogamous. So that's interesting. Eighth house, we have this Pluto in the eighth house, which shows you that there should be legacy. There should be quite the legacy involved with this person. And their Pluto is in Cancer, so somehow their legacy has to do with nurturing. Cancerian things. Also the moon. Lunar. It could be just like nurturing, like love, you know, somehow their legacy. And then their ninth house is Leo, right? Ninth house is your philosophy, your dogma, your, it's also a lot of travel, international travel. And this person has Neptune in Virgo there. That's very interesting because Neptune in Virgo is somehow organizing your creativity. It could make you a writer. It could make you somehow also that Leo on the ninth house could make this person a leader in religion, dogma, philosophy, that kind of thing. This person has Mars in Libra in the 10th house. Libra is ruled by Venus. So having Mars there and this being a man, I would think he was very successful in his career and handsome. And then Jupiter in Scorpio in the 11th house is like, I mean, baseline is this person would be considered very sexy by groups of people, by like large groups of people. But also this person could have been very spiritual, very psychic, very into hidden things, the occult. I mean, it could be sexuality too, but I mean, Scorpios tend to be more like with this Jupiter in Scorpio, it's like the famous person that isn't always out in the middle of the people all the time. Like, it's not the person who wants to go find the paparazzi, right? They kind of
Similar to Johnny Carson.
Maybe, right? Yeah. Like
secluded. It's under his control when he goes out.
Yeah. And prefers not to be in the spotlight, although tons of people really want to see this person, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't any of that making any sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any questions?
And I just would like to reiterate to everyone that I have done my utmost here to make sure that this is an unbiased reading. I did not discuss beforehand who this is. I have taken away the knowledge of the person's birthday and place. And yet there is so much here that Mom has read that is exactly who this person is.
Well, pretty much anybody who reads astrology at all can see what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. Now, also, you know, I mean, normally in the podcast, we don't go into oppositions or squares or any of these things. But Pluto at 25 degrees is opposing the Sun, the Mercury and the Venus. Okay. So there's an opposition from Pluto, and Pluto is death and rebirth. So it's possible that depending on what transits were happening at the time, but in general, this is just this person going back and forth between, you know, death and rebirth in how they do their business, death and rebirth and how they nurture. You know what I mean? There's a lot going on right here between these two, with this being in the eighth house. Do you have any questions?
Yes. What do you think you'd do for a living?
I think this person, you know, because I always like show business, but mm-hmm. I mean, if it isn't show business, then I guess politics, maybe. I mean, this person has to be well known. This person was going to be well known no matter what, you know. This is something that has lightning behind it in the fifth house. I'm thinking show business, but I mean, they could have been very, well, I don't know. I just think that with these aspects, I think this person is in show business. Somehow communicating through creativity.
Mm-hmm. What is his relationship to his mother?
Well, his mother is the Moon. It's in the third house. It's in Pisces. It is conjunct Saturn. I think that this person has karma with their mother and is very attached to their mother because of the Saturn. Either they're very attached or they have a lot of lessons with the mother. But I think that this person's mother was very influential in their creativity and communication. Because it's Moon in Pisces, creative mother. The mother is creative, right? And so I think worst case scenario, the mother was maybe strict and I don't know, because it's in Aquarius. So Saturn in Aquarius doesn't necessarily, that's, you know, Saturn in Aquarius is, Aquarius also was known to be ruled by Saturn, but I think that it's more about humanitarian and groups, you know?
What would his relationships to his siblings be?
Well, Saturn lessons. Saturn is lessons or teaching. So, I mean, it's in Pisces. The Saturn is in Aquarius and the Moon is in Pisces. Creativity. Saturn, though. I mean, I would think that there would be, if this person has siblings, they would be probably karmic, and there would be karma. Because third house is also siblings.
What would this person look like?
I think this person would be really good looking. I think because this person has Mars in Libra in the 10th house and Jupiter in Scorpio in the 11th house, I think that groups of people thought this person was very sexy, and groups of people thought this person, you know, in their career, they're very handsome because ruled by Venus, they're going to be handsome. And then they got that Sagittarius rising, you know, easygoing, easy to get along with, kind of guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who has Sagittarius rising has an advantage in that they could basically do just about anything and get away with it because most people just see them as friendly, you know? But cool. Like, they're cool. Cool, like, not like Scorpio rising cool, where Scorpio rising cool is very mysterious, you know? Mm-hmm. Sag rising people are kind of like, you get what you get. And you feel like they are very real, you know, like they're being real with you.
Mm-hmm. Genuine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they're not hiding anything. They are what they are. You get what you get, you know? And usually that comes across very friendly. Occasionally you get some Sagittarius rising that are very loud and very opinionated, you know? But this person doesn't have anything in their first house, so I don't think they are so much loud and opinionated. And they have all this Capricorn, which would make them, honestly, maybe even a little bit shy.
How does he dress?
Well, that's first house, which is Sagittarius. I think this person... I mean, Sagittarius rising could dress really weird, you know? Like, they could be anything from... They could look really rugged, you know, like they could look really, you know, like brawny, you know what I mean? Probably. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Sagittarius rising is also ruled by Jupiter. So at some point, Sagittarius rising could get heavy, you know, Jupiter is expansive, right? But Sagittarius rising can be flamboyant if they want to be, you know, like I know a Sagittarius rising that would very much like to wear an elaborate cloak as a garment of warmth, so you know, there's that.
Mm-hmm. Would he be susceptible to exploitation? Could people run over him?
Well, as far as, like, I mean, he does have Mars in Libra, okay? Mars in Libra is not the same as Mars in Aries or Mars in Scorpio. You know what I mean? Mars in Libra is very much about balancing what's going on, you know? And having Neptune in Virgo in the ninth house is not helping this person be capable of detailed information. You know what I mean? Like, Neptune in Virgo is like, you know, like a Virgo normally is like spot on, you know, like they know every detail. That is Virgo trait. Virgo trait is needing to make it perfect. Having Neptune in Virgo is like they giving like a drunk Virgo. You know what I mean? Like they don't have the same ability to decipher things the way Virgos do. And the Mars in Libra doesn't so much really care, you know? Like, Mars in Libra is in pursuit of beautiful things, right? They want, and they are beautiful. I would assume this person is very beautiful. And, I mean, they have all the Capricorn in the second house, So they are making money. But their moon is in Pisces. So, I mean, this person is not, even though they're making all this money and they are a very hard worker, I don't think that the actual money is like their whole deal, you know? It's because they just make money. Like, if they had Saturn here in the second house, then they would be more like, oh, I have to make money. You know what I mean? In this situation, their Saturn is not about the money. Their lessons are not about money. Their lessons are about emotions. I would imagine that this person could get very emotional, very heartbroken, you know?
What is his relationship to his country?
Well, he has Pisces on the fourth house, but it changes right here to Aries in the middle, right? So he could be very devoted, like a warrior to his country, to his community, to his environment, to his home. I would imagine that this person would be very willing to defend their home, you know, as a warrior and their country, you know.
What kind of food would he like?
All of it. Jupiter in the first house. Sagittarius on the first house. All of the food. All of it. Because including foods that are from different countries. People who have Sag rising can have an issue with all the food, all the drinks. It's very Bacchus-y, you know?
And his relationship to controlled substances.
Well, he has Neptune in Virgo. So with Neptune in Virgo, although Neptune is where we go to look for alcoholism and stuff like that, this person has Neptune in the sign of health and medicine and organization, right? So with this Neptune in Virgo, I would not think that this person was like an alcoholic, because that would be unorganized. You know what I mean? Like, if they're into anything, it would be somehow organized or medical, or like, you do this because you think it's going to make you better. You do this because, you know, maybe because it's creativity with medicine, maybe this could be a person who, you know, takes herbs or whatever so that they, for medicinal purposes, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And what is their relationship with sexuality and monogamy?
Well, this person got Jupiter in Scorpio. So I would imagine that this person probably could have had as much sex as they wanted to ever. They have Jupiter. I mean, they have Gemini on the seventh house, which normally makes you not very much about being, you know, monogamous and committed. But then they have all this Capricorn in their chart. So when you have people who have Sagittarius rising with Capricorn placements, they can be monogamous. But I don't know how monogamous this person could have been with all of this going for them and being a man, you know?
What kind of father would he be?
Well, he's a Capricorn. And a good Capricorn can be the best father, okay? But a bad Capricorn is like the worst father because they literally do the opposite of what they're supposed to do. Saturn rules Capricorn, so you assume that is the father, you know? Saturn is the father. So, I mean, they could have been a really good father. If they're the good side of everything, then they could have been a really good father. Maybe even kind of too lenient, possibly, of a father. Because that Mars in Libra would not make them very strict. It shouldn't.
Are there any other aspects of this chart, any other final impressions you have about it?
I think that this person might have had the ability to have a huge amount of power that they really didn't know what to do with. They have Moon in Pisces. I can't see them being maniacal or anything like that, you know? And I think that in a lot of ways, with this Scorpio, this Jupiter in Scorpio in the 11th house, they might not have wanted this, you know, like, even though they are so amazing and such a hard worker and so creative and so, you know, beautiful, I think that maybe they just didn't want it.
Do you have any guesses as to who this might be?
I do.
Who?
I think it's Elvis.
You are correct.
I can't lie. I mean, I'm looking at all this stuff and I'm like, wow. Because I've never looked at Elvis's chart before, but this makes a lot of sense. You know? It makes a lot of sense. And it kind of hurts my heart. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It kind of makes me sad and it makes me kind of want to cry. Just getting tuned into it. Because I think that in this situation, you know, like if I didn't know Elvis existed, if I didn't know anything about Elvis, if I wasn't a fan, you know, of his work, I honestly don't know a huge amount about his personal life. But I'm a great fan of his work. And I think that In the opportunities where he was given the opportunity to do his own creativity the way he wanted to do it, he was so much more talented than what they allowed him to do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it hurts my heart. This Moon in Pisces hurts my heart. Your brother is a Capricorn with Moon in Pisces, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a very creative... very creative. That Moon in Pisces is so watery, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, somewhere down in here when I started looking at it, I was like, oh, this could probably be Elvis. But yeah, I can't say that I don't have a guess. Mm-hmm. I have to be honest.
So, at this point, I will, I'll go over our summary. Okay. Before we get into the historical part of Elvis. So the first thing that you said was that he would be very dynamic and have a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. There's a cool factor, but there's also a boy next door factor. Mm-hmm. Be polite. Mm-hmm. He would make a lot of money, be a hard worker. Mm-hmm. Communication is how he made money. Mm-hmm. And he's a humanitarian. He would be very generous with his money. Mm-hmm. Contributed to humanitarian efforts. Extremely creative. loving, a good relationship with women,
mm-hmm.
wants to help humanity with his communication and creativity,
mm-hmm.
Using emotions to convey messages to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
His house would be dreamy, mm-hmm. creative, mm-hmm. unique, a fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen in his life lightning fast. His show business career is lightning fast. Unexpected things and unique things happen.
Yeah.
He would have liked technology.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be a hard worker, a workaholic, someone who had a lot of stamina. There might be early issues in his life with communication that he would overcome and become very good at communicating as a way of his work.
Mm-hmm.
He can turn his communication into healing.
Mm-hmm.
He can turn the pain inside of him into healing others.
Mm-hmm.
He would not be super monogamous, but he would want to be monogamous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He would have a powerful legacy, a legacy that is connected to nurturing, mm-hmm. and is connected to love. There'd be a lot of travel, possible international travel. He would be a writer, a leader, someone who took religion and dogma, philosophy, spirituality very seriously. He'd be very successful, and he'd be very handsome. He would be considered very sexy by large groups of people.
Yes.
But there's also something that is very spiritual, nearly psychic about
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
And he might prefer seclusion. He would want to meet the crowds on his own schedules. He wouldn't like the paparazzi around him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a death and rebirth connected to his business.
Mm-hmm.
His career would be show business. He would be well known, and lightning is connected to his career, literal.
That is hilarious, too, because I just realized the lightning bolt and the TCB. Mm-hmm. I just saw that when you said that. That's so funny.
Communicating through creativity. There's karma with his mother.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be very attached.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of lessons with his mother.
Mm-hmm.
His mother's very influential in his creativity and communication.
Mm-hmm.
His mother could possibly be strict. There are lessons with siblings and karma with siblings. He'd be very good looking. Groups of people would think that he was sexy.
Mm-hmm.
He is easygoing, easy to get along with, mm-hmm. charming,
mm-hmm.
Friendly, and mm-hmm. cool in a genuine way.
Mm-hmm.
You get what you get.
Mm-hmm.
He could be a very shy.
Mm-hmm.
He would dress really weird.
Could be.
Could be rugged.
Mm-hmm.
Could get heavy in life.
Mm-hmm.
Would be flamboyant.
Could be, yes.
He would want balance in his life, not capable of detailed information. He would be always in pursuit of beautiful things.
Yes.
He'd be very good at making money and a very hard worker, but
mm-hmm.
money is not his end goal.
Mm-hmm.
He would just make money.
Mm-hmm.
His lessons, the thing about his existence in this life was about emotions.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be very devoted to his country, his community, his home. He could be a warrior
mm-hmm.
who could defend his home.
Mm-hmm.
He would want all the food,
yeah.
a variety of food, exotic foods.
Yes.
He would not be an alcoholic. That is too unorganized.
Mm-hmm.
He would be attracted to organized substances,
mm-hmm.
medicine.
Mm-hmm.
He could have as much sex as he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It would be hard for him to be committed, to mm-hmm. be monogamous.
Mm-hmm.
He could either be the best or the worst father,
mm-hmm.
But possibly really good, maybe too lenient. There is a huge amount of power that he didn't know what to do with
mm-hmm.
and might not have wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So as predicted, this is the astrological birth chart of Elvis Presley.
Mm-hmm.
He was born on January 9th, 1935, in Tupelo, Mississippi. He was born to his mother Gladys, his father Vernon Presley, and they were a very struggling, poor family in rural Mississippi. They had gotten married earlier, and they were living in different families' spare rooms. And then when Gladys became pregnant, Vernon decided that she would need her own house to have the baby. And so he borrowed $150 so that he could construct a two-room shack for her to give birth in. The morning of January 8th, 1935, it was it was overcast and rainy. And in the early morning hours, the first child, there were twins that were born.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was named Jesse Aaron, and he was stillborn. And then Elvis was born later. The fact that there was a twin brother who had not survived was something that Gladys reminded Elvis of all the time, and that he would need to do enough living for both of them. At the age of three, Vernon, who had been struggling from job to job in Tupelo, was eventually arrested for check fraud, and he was sent to prison. Because he was unable to care for the family, they would have to give up that two-room shack, and they would have to start living in different family members' houses again, living off of the kindness of their community, borrowing and taking whatever leftovers they could eat.
Mm-hmm.
Fellow classmates remember Elvis as being withdrawn, but he was always eager to sing. He was always willing to participate in church and in elementary school when it came to singing. Circumstances with the father being in prison and falling on hard times placed his mother and him living in the black neighborhood of Tupelo. And it was there that Elvis was exposed to a completely different kind of culture, different kind of music and a way of expressing yourself in the music, in religion, and all of these things. And he soaked up all of these unique ways that the black families were expressing themselves. At the age of 10, Elvis got his first guitar from the pawn shop because his family could not afford to buy him a bicycle. So he got a guitar instead, and he learned how to play from family members and especially from his pastor at his church. Elvis so much loved going to church and had such a religious connection that even when his father or mother was not able to go to church, he would walk by himself to go to church. At the age of 13, Vernon had had enough of struggling in rural Mississippi and decided to move the family to the capital of the Mississippi Delta, Memphis. After a few months, they would end up living in housing projects called Lauderdale Courts. It was during this time that Elvis already developed his unique sense of style. He did not look like any of the other boys. You can imagine in the early 1950s, there were a lot of clean-cut boys, people wearing jeans and shirts. And Elvis, he wanted to go to the tailors who made clothes for African-American performers and got bright pink shirts with black sports coats. And he grew his hair long. If it was down, it would cover his eyes, and then he would style it with rose water and Vaseline. And this made him picked on a lot by the kids in the middle school and the high school that he was going to. Even at this time, he's already experimenting with makeup as well to make sure that he is always looking unique and stylized. His mother instinctively trusted Elvis, knew that he would not do anything that she didn't want him to do. And so he had a lot of freedom in his adolescence.
And
He would walk all throughout Memphis, and one of his favorite spots was to go down Beale Street in Memphis, which is the home of the blues, and there he would listen to artists like Bo Diddley and B.B. King and Big Mama Thornton, and again, soak in their knowledge and their music and bring it into himself, and would later incorporate all of that tutelage into his own unique style. He continued to be picked on in school, though he did fairly well in class. In fact, the only class that he failed in school was music class.
Oh, no!
He graduated in 1953, and he started working as an usher in a movie theater, and then moved up, and he became a truck driver. And the way that he got the job as a truck driver, there was the lady from the unemployment office who called the electric company and said that despite how he looks, he's a very good boy, and you could really help him out by giving him a job. And the clerk at the electric company said, well, what do you want to do with your life? And he said, all I want to do is make enough money to buy my mom a house. He was crisscrossing all over this region of Tennessee and Arkansas, and would go, of course, all around Memphis. And there is this business that was a Memphis recording studio. It would later become Sun Records. There's a man named Sam Phillips who ran this operation off of Union Street in Memphis. And Elvis kept passing it, and he kept thinking that maybe I should go in there one day, and maybe he might discover me. And so one of these days, in August of 1955, he goes in, or 54, he goes in to record a record for his mother's birthday. And the clerk there, the secretary, Marianne Keisker, she said, well, okay, Elvis, what kind of music do you sing? And he said, well, I sing all kinds of music. She said, well, that's very nice. So, well, who do you sound like? And he says, ma'am, I don't sound like nobody.
That's true.
Marion decided that she was not going to wait for Sam, that she was going to go ahead and help him and record this herself. And he starts singing. And Elvis, at this point, he loved ballads. He loved these old-fashioned ballads. One of his favorite songs was Old Shep, a song about a dog. And so he was singing these ballads. And there was a sound there that she knew was unique, but no one really knew what to do with it at that time. So she gave Elvis a copy of this recording, and then she kept one herself and wrote a note on it to make sure that Sam hears this boy, that there's something special about him. Well, he kept coming in every couple of months or so, and eventually Sam Phillips started to listen to it, but he kept singing these ballads, and there was nothing really spectacular about it. So Sam kept saying, and he kept saying to Mary, and he kept saying to anybody who would listen, that if he could find a white boy who could sing like a black boy, that he could make $1 billion. And Sam was already in all these different businesses. He was he created the first all-female radio network that he did out of Memphis. I think it was called WHER. He was already recording these blues artists, which nearly no one was, but he knew that this music was important. This music could move people. And so he gives Elvis this other shot, and it's in the summer, and in July 5th of 1954, and they record all through the evening, and it's just not working. They're just singing all these ballads, and it's just not working. And so they decide to call it a night. And while they're putting away the instruments, Elvis just starts fiddling around on the guitar. And then the rest of the boys, the bass player and the rhythm guitar, they start jumping in, and they're just goofing around with this old song called That's All Right, Mama. And Sam hears this, and he says, what are you all playing in there? And they said, oh, well, we're just goofing around. And he says, well, keep goofing around. And so he recorded That's All Right, Mama and Blue Moon of Kentucky. And a few days later, he sends it off to the radio station, and it just hits gangbusters. They keep playing it. They just it's requested over and play that song again, play that song again. And no one believes that this boy who's singing is a white is white. Uh-huh. They think that it's African American man, and so they have to find Elvis out on the street to bring him into the radio station, and they start talking, and Elvis doesn't even know that this is a real interview. He just thinks that he's just talking with this man. Uh-huh. And then they say, okay, well, thank you, Elvis, and all that was going out to the radio, and this becomes a huge, huge hit in Memphis, and Sam Phillips decides to record lots of other songs and then puts him out on the circuit, puts him out on the carnival circuit, puts him out touring all over the South.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, he would go on to the Grand Ole Opry, which was, you know, this huge, huge radio show. And they didn't quite care for his rock and roll music. But the second most famous radio station or radio show in the area, the Louisiana Hayride, they loved it. Mm-hmm. And the way that the women reacted to Elvis, because he would just move. He had no other way of controlling all of this rhythm and all how the music affected him. He would just move his body in all sorts of ways and shake his legs and women. No one had ever seen anything like this. Mm-hmm. Ever. And through all these shows, and he plays all over Texas. He would often say that he really got his start in Texas. Mm-hmm. Playing all the little honky tonks and playing all through Houston and all these other places. And while he was out on these circuits, there was a carnival promoter who turned into a music promoter named Colonel Tom Parker.
Mm-hmm.
And Colonel Parker said that he was from West Virginia, but was really non-naturalized citizen from Holland.
Oh, no.
And he, at that time, was the promoter for Hank Snow, who was a big country star, had a lot of hit records himself. And I think it's easy, if anyone knows anything about Elvis, to automatically point to Colonel Parker as the ultimate reason for his demise, that this was just this man who was an exploiter. And there's certainly lots of evidence to prove on that. I think, mm-hmm, that one of the things that Colonel Parker became famous for as this carnival showman is that he would have a chicken, and he would put the chicken on a hot plate, alive, and he would play Turkey in the Straw.
That's very bad.
And watch as the chicken tried to lift its feet to not get burned from this hot plate. And you can see, it's real easy to draw the conclusion that, well, Colonel Parker just saw Elvis Presley as another version of this chicken.
That's
just a
very
much
bad.
just a much bigger version of this. Colonel Parker didn't understand the music. He didn't understand why anybody liked it. But he knew that people did, and he knew that there was something absolutely special about this young man. And so in 1955, he signed Elvis to a contract, and later on in that year, he negotiated the largest contract that any solo artist had ever gotten up to that point, over $40,000, to get him off of the Sun record and onto RCA Victor. With that $40,000, Sam Phillips took a large part of that, and he invested in the Holiday Inn and became a multi-millionaire. But he also took a large part of that money to grow Sun Records so that he could produce records for people like Roy Orbison and Carl Perkins and Johnny Cash and Jerry Lee Lewis. And all that would not have been possible without this contract that gave Elvis to RCA, and Elvis became a huge millionaire to boot.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great deal that Parker was able to negotiate. And it was at this time in 1956 that Elvis was now no longer just this Southern phenomenon. He becomes known to the world, or at least to the rest of the United States. And the rest of the United States also didn't know what it liked to think about this boy who was gyrating and moving his legs all about. And they said that he's causing a juvenile delinquency, that rock and roll music and Elvis in particular needs to be stopped at all costs. And this really affected him psychologically, because he wasn't doing this to be this great delinquent. He was just feeling the music with inside him, and
right.
he was a very spiritual person, and uh-huh. Was always very polite. And eventually, he goes on to the Ed Sullivan Show, and that's one of the hugest variety shows that there ever was. And Ed Sullivan, he'd already been on national television. Elvis had been on national television a few times. He had been on the Texaco Show with Milton Berle, and he'd been on Steve Allen. Steve Allen hated rock and roll music so much that he told Elvis that you cannot move, and in fact, I'm going to put you in a tux, and you have to sing Hound Dog to this actual Basset Hound.
Oh, no.
Because we want to make a fool out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And on Ed Sullivan, that first time around, he didn't have any restrictions on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so they filmed him. This is not the time that they filmed him, only from the waist up. You saw everything. You saw all the women going crazy. And after the end of this performance, Ed Sullivan goes up and he goes straight to the camera and he says, out of all of the acts that we've ever seen here, Elvis and these boys behind him are the most polite. They are the most decent young men that I've ever seen.
Aww.
And that did a huge amount for Elvis in being able to not be seen as just this a delinquent, but
mm-hmm.
but as someone that you could have in your own home, that it was all right, that he was a good young man.
Mm-hmm.
He continues on this success, and Colonel Parker decides, and Elvis, they get together, and, well, what do all the other big music stars do? Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, as soon as they get their first number one hits, they then go to Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
And so Colonel Parker negotiated a contract with MGM, and they make Elvis's first motion picture, Love Me Tender, and it is the number one film that year.
Yeah.
It is huge. They make, and he's continued to make records, Hound Dog, Heartbreak Hotel, Too Much, All Shook Up, Teddy Bear, all hitting number one. Movies, so Love Me Tender's the first one. He
mm-hmm.
makes Jailhouse Rock, King Creole. King Creole, honestly, it's my favorite of these early ones because it has not only Elvis in there, but also has Walter Matthau, who is the most New York-y New Orleans man I've ever seen. And I was watching this one thing, and Walter Matthau talks about, he was much older than Elvis, and talked about how great of a young man he was and how serious of an actor he wanted to be.
Right.
And that no one really allowed him to be that great of an actor. Though
yeah.
people tried, they yeah. tried to get him to play Marlon Brando's role in Where the Wild Ones Are. And eventually they would try and get him to be in George Peppard's role in How the West Was Won and
yeah.
all these grand pictures. And the Colonel just would not let him. But they were talking on the set, and Walter Matthau's talking, and this was directed by Michael Curtiz, and Michael Curtiz directed Casablanca.
Yeah.
One of the greatest directors, and this was... These Elvis movies, even these really great ones, were still seen by these great producers and directors as being beneath them.
Yeah.
And so Michael Curtiz was German, and he told Walter Matthau that I need you to act less. Just act less. And so that you can meet Elvie. He called Elvis Elvie.
Mm-hmm.
So meet Elvie and you will both be acting the same if you act less.
Mm-hmm.
But Walter Matthau was completely impressed with a young Elvis. And
mm-hmm.
So these all came out in 1957. And then March of 1958, Elvis's number comes up in the draft. And he is drafted into the United States Army. And he's offered the deal to be in the USO, to be in the Entertainment Corps,
mm-hmm.
to just go around the country, go around to these stations and entertain the troops. And Elvis says, no, I want to be treated like any other soldier.
Yeah.
So he is put in and into the tank division. He is trained at Fort Hood, Texas.
Yes.
And it is there that Gladys, his mother, develops hepatitis.
Mm.
And she passes away rapidly in August of 1958. And that had a profound impact on Elvis for the rest of his life. Many of those who were close to him said that he never had the verve for life. He never enjoyed life much after Gladys died in 1958. You could just see that they had spent so much time together because mm-hmm. of Vernon either being in prison or going off on all these jobs. Mm-hmm. And there was that they had lost the brother, Jesse. And there's just such this connection between the two that it was much more than just a mother that he had lost. It was his friend, his companion. It was everything.
Right.
But he continued as a soldier. He was eventually stationed in Ray Barracks in Germany, and he was determined to be the best soldier and not to get any special treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And before I go into all that, there's this other part about when he was drafted that young girls, teenagers, wrote letters to President Eisenhower demanding that Elvis not be drafted. Please,
no.
Please, Mr. President, don't make Elvis go into the army, please. And then a few of them, they'd say in their letters, and if you do make him go into the army, please don't let him cut that hair.
Oh,
that
no.
Beautiful hair, please. But no, Elvis, he got the same buzz cut that all the other GIs did. And Elvis, when he was in Germany, was determined to be the absolute best soldier, and he earned every promotion that he ever got. At one point, there was an inspection of the vehicles. He was in the tank corps, and he went down underneath the jeeps, and he sanded the tailpipes so that they were shiny.
Oh, my.
When the commanding officer looked over everything, he said, Presley, I don't have to do this, but I need to say that these are the finest looking automobiles that I've ever seen. And he would eventually be promoted to sergeant mm-hmm. In the Army. And then he left in 1960. But before he did, he met a 14-year-old girl named Priscilla.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the daughter of an Air Force colonel, and spent a lot of time with her. Even though they were 10 years apart, he was 24 and she was 14. Somehow they had this connection, and he really felt that he could open up to her. And I think especially with the mother having just passed away, he was looking for that female companionship, and somehow he found it in this little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And they developed this relationship, and though when he got on the airplane to go back to the United States, Priscilla thought that she'd never see him again.
Mm-hmm.
But she was always on his mind, and he went back to the United States, and he went home to a hero's welcome, and all of the people who had denounced Elvis now saw his service in the Army, and one of the ones who had denounced him the most was Frank Sinatra. And it was in 1960, Frank Sinatra hosted a television special welcoming Elvis back home, telling people that this is a decent, hardworking young man, the perfect specimen of what America should want out of its young people.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes into 1960 and he makes a whole bunch of records. Colonel Parker had actually recorded a whole bunch of songs before he went into the Army and was steadily releasing them throughout the 2 years.
Oh,
so that nobody would forget who Elvis was. And then they immediately got into the studio and recorded Elvis Is Back, and so many good songs come out off of that album. And they make several really great movies. They make G.I. Blues, Flaming Star, Blue Hawaii. It's a little bit after this first wave that some of these films start to fall off in quality. These first few were very good, and he really did want to be taken seriously as an actor. He would even go and follow the Stanislavski method mm-hmm. and really try and become the best actor that he could be.
Mm-hmm.
But these great producers and the people at MGM, Hal Wallace would make three Elvis movies a year,
mm-hmm.
And he would take the profits, because they were huge money makers.
Yes.
And then he would put them into the movies that he really wanted to make.
Yeah.
Really just treated Elvis as this bank.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Colonel Parker was seeing it, too. Mm-hmm. There's this formula, and you don't mess with this formula. And Elvis was just working at making these three films a year and never really getting to express himself, either acting or in singing.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you get to the late 60s, he's really burnt out on all of it.
Right.
That he's having to make these films that he doesn't really want to do and sing these songs that he really doesn't want to. I will say, in the middle of all this, in 1964, he makes Viva Las Vegas. And that may not have won any Academy Awards, but... It is a great premise because it is essentially taking the most beautiful man in the world and taking the most beautiful woman in the world and Margaret, and then just putting them in a movie together. And you can see the chemistry on screen and off screen. It was just as hot. These two were... And they got along together because they were in the same business and they understood all these pressures that were put upon both of them.
Right.
And not just the usual pressures, but these pressures of being sex symbols and everything. But I would say out of this middle range of movies, Viva Las Vegas is definitely one everybody should try. That relationship was not to be, as Elvis had actually... gotten Priscilla to come from Germany and live in Graceland.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she was a minor and they were not married, she lived in Graceland. Now, all stories, according to Priscilla and Elvis, they never did any funny business.
Mm-hmm.
But Priscilla was living in Graceland so that she could attend high school in Memphis and graduate in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, and then she continued to live there. And then in 1967, they got married at the Aladdin Hotel in Las Vegas. Elvis continues to make these poor quality movies. A huge thing happens in his life in February when their daughter, Lisa Marie, is born. But this is 1968. The world is radically different from when Elvis started his journey, with all of the protests, with the Vietnam War. The view towards Elvis now was that he was stale. He was making these movies, and every one of these movies was still making money, but nobody really thought that there was no critical acclaim. There's nothing groundbreaking being done anymore. And even Colonel Parker is starting to see this, and he says, we need to now do a Christmas special.
Mm-hmm.
And so in June of 1968, they get together with NBC. And Colonel Parker, if you've seen the new Elvis movie, you've seen Tom Hanks and his ridiculous Bond villain accent as Colonel Parker say that he wants Elvis to sing Sanity Clause, Sanity Clause. And this whole Christmas special, he wants Elvis in a sweater to sing Christmas songs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this meeting with the director, Steve Binder, and Elvis says, tell me, what do you think of my career? And Steve Binder says, well, Elvis, I think it's in the toilet.
Yeah.
And Elvis goes, you know, you're the first person who's actually talked straight with me about that. And so the two of them get together to have complete control over this television special. Mm-hmm. And there's not going to be one Christmas song in there. And Elvis is just going to do what Elvis does. He gets this special jumpsuit made that's made out of black leather.
Mm-hmm.
And he started to take on karate. So he's going to do karate moves in the middle of these songs. And Steve, they're trying to figure out other parts of the special, and Steve goes into his dressing room and he's just jamming. Elvis is just jamming with his musicians, and they go, this is what it should be. It should just be this jam session. And so Elvis, that they bring him out, and they just do a jam session like nobody else is there. And all this classic rock and roll is now this music that he became famous on, but also the music of his roots. And you just see that the 68 is it's now called the Comeback Special because it brought Elvis back to not just, I mean, Elvis, there are some people say, well, Elvis never really went away, mm-hmm. but that zest for life, that zest of music, that even spiritual quality was brought back with this television special. And they decide to end the special. Elvis was very conscious of the world that was around him, and with especially the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, which had happened earlier that year. There's this song called If I Can Dream.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis used to just go around and he would quote the I Have a Dream speech mm-hmm. from Martin Luther King. It meant so much mm-hmm. to him. And King had having died in his own hometown of Memphis mm-hmm. and to know that there's still this strife out there between blacks and whites and Elvis feeling like he's somehow in the middle of these two cultures. He really wanted to do this song, If I Can Dream, and he fought with Colonel Parker, and then he finally got it in. And it's one of the most moving performances you can watch. And it's a song that he didn't even record this later on. The only recording that there is of this in the television special, but it's mm-hmm. so moving when you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
So this debuts in December of 1968. It's the most watched television special of the year. Elvis is now brought back up to the top. He goes in and he records from Elvis in Memphis. This has songs In the Ghetto, Suspicious Minds on it. It's a huge hit. And in fact, he was working so well with the people inside that they were cutting Colonel Parker out of these deals.
Mm-hmm.
And so Colonel Parker said that would never happen again. You'd never even see these people again. Elvis never got to talk to that director ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Never.
Mm-hmm.
But they do decide that the movies are done. And so what they're going to do instead is they're going to go to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And Elvis puts together this Vegas show. And I would encourage everyone, if you're interested in any of the ramblings that I'm going on, because this is a much longer episode than usual. But I love Elvis so much. To watch That's the Way It Is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is this is Elvis putting together his Vegas show. And you can see he's not some stooge who's just being put out on stage. He is commanding the orchestra, and it's now full orchestra behind him. And he knows exactly when he wants the backups to come in and go out, and when he wants the horns to come in. And this performance is truly amazing. And he decides that in order to do these shows in Vegas, he can't just go out there in a suit, because a suit is too restrictive. He needs something that's like his karate outfits that he has been practicing karate in.
Mm-hmm.
And so they make these jumpsuits that are based off of these karate outfits so that he can have a full motion
mm-hmm.
In everything that he does, because he feels the music all throughout every part of his body. And the designers of these decide that they're going to make Elvis look like the neon signs of Vegas. And so they put all of these rhinestones and they put all of these designs. And for those of you who may just think of Elvis and you think of this overweight man in a white jumpsuit, you don't understand the beauty of these things
mm-hmm.
and the intricate work that went into each and every one of them. If you go to Graceland, they have so many of them all over the place, and the capes and the sequins, and some of these he would literally take the cape off of himself and he would fling it out into the audience, and one of the audience members got to keep these capes that were worth thousands and thousands of dollars. And this Vegas show completely reinvigorated Elvis's love of the community, of the audience. You watch these, and they would always play either Love Me Tender or Can't Help Falling in Love. And when they did that, that was time for Elvis to go into the audience and kiss every single woman in the audience. I don't know what kind of diseases that man could have gotten. This is certainly a pre-COVID world, but he is just kissing on all these women, and this happened all the time. He's doing 2 shows a day, 7 days a week in Vegas. Then they decide to go all over the United States, and they tour all over the United States. And their talks, if Elvis had gone international, if Elvis had ever gone to Europe or to Australia or to Asia, they would have made billions of dollars. But Colonel Parker would not let them go outside of the United States because he was not a citizen of the United States. He was afraid that if they got back into the United States, they would not let Colonel Parker back in. So he put the kibosh on all that. Now, there's also all of the prescription drugs and all of the firearms that Elvis would have taken with him. Yes. And whether those all would have been able to be checked in through Gatwick Airport in London, I don't know. But they also point to that as a reason for why he didn't get to go all over the world. In 1972, another big hit came for Elvis when Priscilla decided they need to separate. Clearly, Elvis could not be monogamous because how could you with all of these women throwing themselves at you? It was something that he wanted, but just couldn't. He wasn't capable of it. And Priscilla left Elvis for his karate instructor. And that really took a blow to Elvis's ego. And he would just at late at nights in Graceland, he would just say the karate instructor.
Yeah.
How the karate instructor. But even though he had suffered this blow, they actually became closer in their divorce than they ever were when they were married, because they had Lisa Marie and they need to take care of her. And they left the filing office when they filed their divorce arm in arm, with more affection for each other than they ever had before. In 1973, Elvis is the first solo artist to have a live concert beamed all across the world. Elvis Aloha from Hawaii broadcast in January of 1973. Over 1.5 billion people in the world watched Elvis, over 36 countries. And this whole concert that was done in Hawaii, he didn't keep a single cent from the proceeds, the profits of this concert. It was all donated to the Key Lee Cancer Fund. So over $75,000 in 1974, that's over $450,000 today, all donated. Elvis continues on this huge schedule, and every time he ever got into a spat with the with Colonel Parker about, I need to take time for myself, I need to, in fact, this whole situation isn't working out, Colonel Parker would say, well, fine, you can fire me, but you owe me $2 million if you do. And Elvis didn't have $2 million. He barely had anything because he was either always giving it away to people or these other people like Colonel Parker were managing his money for him, making sure he wouldn't have any money. So he's doing over 170 concerts a year. He has all of these people who are enabling him. And he starts back in the Vegas days. They start saying the most important thing is to get Elvis on that stage. So if he is up all night doing these shows, he only gets a few hours to go to sleep, and he's so keyed up he can't go to sleep, so they give him downers to go to sleep, and then he's too groggy when he wakes up, so they give him the uppers, so that he's taking these uppers and downers. They found this doctor, Dr. Nicopolis in Memphis, who is prescribing over 10,000 prescription pills in an 8-month period that were given to Elvis, and that completely riddled his digestive system, made him blow up. By August of 1977, Elvis is planning to go on another tour, another backbreaking tour all over the United States, and he has a heart attack and he dies at Graceland on August 16th, 1977. When he died, the president of the United States, Jimmy Carter, said that Elvis had fundamentally and permanently changed American culture. John Lennon said, before Elvis, there was nothing. Mm-hmm. On August 17th, the day after he died, more flowers were sold in the United States than in any other day in American history, mm-hmm. as people from all over the nation sent flowers to Graceland. Mm-hmm. There were vigils that were held there for days on end. Another thing about flowers, the way that Anne Margaret found out that Elvis had died was because flowers were not delivered to her dressing room in Vegas, because Elvis had been sending flowers to her dressing room in Vegas every day. Mm-hmm. And because those flowers didn't show up, she knew something was wrong, and then she found out that he died. Mm-hmm. Elvis, if you can't tell by now, I absolutely love the man. He is bigger than life. There's something spiritual that comes over me when I listen to his songs. I myself, maybe not the most common opinion, I love the 70s stuff. I love the operatic voice that he has. That we just celebrated Elvis's birthday. They had a showing of That's the Way It Is. I teared up seeing some of these songs. If you ever see some of the later performances, even when he's all bloated and he's got so many problems and he's so sad, you listen to songs like Hurt and Unchained Melody, and it's still so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Just a truly remarkable man, a great show of the possibilities and the opportunities available in America. So wonderful. Mm-hmm. And there's so many things that I've left out of this story, and we may come back and pick up on certain dates and things that he did, but truly a wonderful person. And I think that this is absolutely who he was. The, mm-hmm. the greatness, the sadness, the connections to women, to his mother, mm-hmm. to money. He makes money, but it's not his goal. There are so many things. And the last things, you know, that he has a huge amount of power that he didn't know what to do with,
right.
and might not have wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting, because the entire time I was reading, I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, this is clearly a megalithic person, you know. But I mean, I never know with you. I never know if you're in politics or if you're in show business or if you're in some place that I don't, some hidden part of history that I don't know what it is. But yeah, it's all right here in his chart, you know. And what's interesting is, while you were discussing the history of Elvis, I looked up Priscilla's birthday, and she was a Gemini. So her birthday was May 24th. So he would have had to have a Gemini or a Cancer, if you're doing equal house cusps, to keep his attention, you know. He was devoted, I believe, to Priscilla, and I think he would have tried his best, you know, to be faithful to her. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, what was she doing with the karate guy, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, what's that about? So we don't know the answers, and I don't have her chart in front of me, but I've always loved Elvis, and I did not know he had Sag rising ever. I just knew he was a Capricorn, but I've never looked it up. I've never looked at his chart before. So yeah, I think he is a magical person, and I don't think he was from here, if you understand the vernacular of what that means when I say it, you know.
I mean, and people, they even, there's one of Elvis's albums in the 70s is Prince from Another Planet.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something about him that is otherworldly. It's larger than life. Mm-hmm. It is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes into why many people don't think that it can't be possible that he died from a heart attack like any other person in 1977. They you know, the National Enquirer will say that he's in a trailer park in Mobile, Alabama, or wherever. It's because we as a people can't comprehend that this person who was so big and larger than life and did so much. You listen, it's not just John Lennon and the Beatles. Mm-hmm. The impact that he had on music around the world.
Right.
That he could have just died like that. Mm-hmm. And so sad too. So there's this idea that maybe somehow he figured out how to throw off the colonel and throw all these people off of his back and live his life the way that he wanted to, or that he's just a straight up alien from another planet. Mm-hmm. And as Agent K says, Elvis didn't die. He just went back home.
Well, I mean, we don't know. I mean, we don't know if any of these celebrities actually die or not. We don't know what goes on in the world. You know, we only know what they tell us. So, I mean, you could think that Elvis is alive and well in some place where he's doing exactly what he wants and nothing else, and that he had to fake his own death in order to be happy, or he really did pass away and, you know, he's gone on to the next thing he wants to do. You know, it's no matter what you, no matter how you want to look at it, whoever this soul is, they are very dynamic. So no matter where he goes, whether he comes back to Earth, if you believe in reincarnation or not, or he goes to the next place, he's going to be a big deal. He's a big deal. Like they say in Star Wars, I'm a big deal.
I think on our scale of right on the money to way out in outer space, this one is right on the money. This is who Elvis was. You have any other thoughts about the chart, about everything?
Yeah, I can't imagine any astrologer that could pull this chart and not go, yeah, this is the deal. But I mean, there's a lot here, you know, there's a lot here that I didn't even get into, but it's pretty obvious, you know.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot that I didn't even get into either. Uh-huh. So we may have to revisit Elvis at another point. That just about wraps us up for our season premiere of season 3 of History in Retrograde. I'd like to thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to find out more about the show, help us see what's going on our social media, we've got links provided in the show description. We also have a link to our PayPal account. Every little bit helps us in producing a better quality show and expanding our audience. And if you would like to be your very own Mystery History guest, we can make that happen for you. You just reach out to the email provided, chandlersmom@historyinretrograde.com, and mom will get with you about all the details on how to have either your chart or your chart with a special someone. We're getting into February, we're getting into Valentine's Day, so if you'd like to find out if your Valentine match is set in the stars, well, we can make that happen.
Absolutely. And I'm going to be adding dates and places and towns where I will be meeting you guys. I actually am going to different locations around Texas. And maybe this year we might get to a place to where Chandler and I do a live show somewhere in the world. But for right now, if you want to know where I'm going to be, just check out the social media and you'll know where I'll be that week.
Yes. So thank you all again so much for listening. As always, in conclusion, as long as your houses are in order and the stars are aligned, everything will be just fine.
Everything's going to be just fine. Welcome to 2023. We're very excited to see what happens this year. Thank you for listening. We love you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.